Coming up on KSDP News, St. Paul's fur seals are having fewer and fewer pups. Stay tuned. Good afternoon. You're listening to KSDP 830 AM Sandpoint. I'm Marissa Williams, and you're listening to some local news on Thursday, January 26, 2017. Fur seal pup production on St. Paul Island has hit its lowest level since 1915. Every other year, members of the Seattle's Marine Mammal Laboratory travel to the Pribilof Islands to estimate how many pups are born. Scientist Rod Tuell has been a part of the count since 1992. He says the difference at the rockeries on St. Paul is striking.
I'm not going to say it was full coverage, but it looks like a moving carpet in a sense. As you look across the distance, there's movement all across the rocks. The rocks are fairly covered. I mean, you can see them, but there's seals moving everywhere, whereas now it looks more patchy.
Towell estimates the seals are covering about half as much land as they did on his first trip to the island. He says the cause of the decline is a mystery.
There hasn't been commercial pressure on St. Paul Island since 1984. The fur market's gone way down. We haven't seen any real obvious mortality pressure on this population since then.
Towell believes a different research project may be the key to solving this mystery. Every year since the late 2000s, the team has tagged fur seal pups on St. Paul and St. George for a new study. Tao thinks that data will help pinpoint where the population is suffering most and if there are big variations in the numbers of pups born each year. The seabirds that died by the hundreds of thousands last winter in the Gulf of Alaska appear to be the latest victims of the blob, a huge body of warm ocean water that has dominated North Pacific marine ecosystems over the last few years. Shannon Atkinson of the University of Alaska Fairbanks presented a paper on the die-off at the Alaska Marine Science Symposium this week. She studied the bodies of the dead common murres that appeared in Seward before washing up on the beaches across the Gulf. She says the birds were underweight to the point of starvation. The number of starved murres and the length of their die-off was something no one had seen before. Scientists struggled to understand why a species that spends most of the winter offshore eating fish would fly to the coast and die of starvation on the beach. Atkinson says research shows a link between the starving birds and trawl surveys that came up empty. With fewer forage fish in the water, she says scientists had their smoking gun. She said the catch per unit effort for all of these species was very close to zero, meaning the forage fish was simply not there. So all of these little red dots are basically zeros, or as you may as well make them little X's in the eyes of common murres. The poor number of forage fish is due to several years of unusually warm water. Until the blob appeared and worked its way north up the coast, sea temperatures had been rising gradually as a result of climate change. But the blob heated everything up even more, enough to change the types of plankton found in Alaska waters. Instead of the big, fatty, cold water copepods, the sea has lots of smaller and less fatty warm water varieties. That's meant less food for the fish that murres depend on. It also affected fish and krill all the way to St. Paul Island in the Bering Sea, where residents have seen hundreds of puffin carcasses come ashore. Atkinson says, dead birds all around, and there were so many that even the fox were having trouble keeping up eating them all, so it was clearly throwing that ecosystem into an imbalance. Atkinson says the good news is that so far there's no data to indicate warmer waters have hurt salmon runs, although there's concerns that salmon themselves may be getting smaller. Despite deep cold last weekend, preparations got underway for the Yukon Quest International Sled Dog Race. In fact, mushers and organizers say they welcome the brisk temperatures. KUAC's Molly Retting has a story.
Our Eagle was a cold weekend for mushers and organizers as they made final preparations for the Yukon quest. On Saturday, volunteers kept warm by hauling 40-pound bags of dog food and stacking them on pallets in the parking lot of Summit Logistics. Still, the cold weather was better than the alternative, according to race manager Alex Olson.
It's kind of a good thing that it's a cold year because, like, warm years are scary.
That's because from here, race organizers are in charge of keeping the food frozen, including thousands of pounds of moose, tripe, chicken, and fish.
Like, that's the real worry with all that meat that's been, like, cut apart and, like, in bags, like, all, like, nice and thinly sliced. If it gets warm, all that stuff freezes together, and then, like, it just takes them forever during the race to deal with it.
Olison said dealing with food drops is one of the more stressful parts of the job.
A couple years ago now, it seems like there were days in a row where it was, like, 35 and 38 and stuff. And people were calling me freaking out, and I texted pictures to these mushers, like, of thermometers on the food drops that were at, like, 25.
About a dozen mushers dropped off bags of food and gear, everything from spare sled runners to beaver fat and cow stomach. Many were still recuperating from a 300-mile race in Glen Allen that ended just a few days earlier. After winning the Copper Basin 300, Two Rivers musher Ryan Olson pulled up in a white pickup with a few dozen plastic burlap stacks piled in back.
And then it was 40 below, and we're trying to cut meat, and it's like 45 below out.
Oh, of all the times.
So you have, like, a heater on the meat saw. Yeah. And
Cody Strath was helping drop bags for his wife, Paige Drobny. They'd spent all morning packing and weighing bags full of dog and human food, including a variety of burritos from the local restaurant Hard Eats.
She's got breakfast burritos, and they make, like, Thanksgiving burritos, which I don't even know what's in there yet. I'm imagining turkey and stuffing or something and gravy. I don't know, but it's going to be good. Lots of, like, candied bacon from them and some other friends. And then I make a lot of food, like stroganoff and pasta and things like that.
After years of dog races, the Esther mushers have the packing process pretty well figured out.
I also don't really stress over it anymore because I just deal with whatever I got when I'm out there, and it's usually fine. And there's always somebody next to you who's got something extra, and it's kind of like kids at school trading lunch, you know, you just work it out, it's fine.
The food drop is a huge milestone for Quest mushers, who spend almost as much time prepping for races as running them this time of year.
Excited to be done with these.